Our message today is titled Land of the Free and the Home of the Brave. And we welcome up our own Reverend Elizabeth Price.
Thank you, Sue. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all today on this 4th of July weekend. I don't know about you, but it was very hard to celebrate this year, seeing some nods around the room. But celebrate we must, because we've come a long way in our history. We have a long way to go, and we don't want to forget where we've been. So what I did was get an historical perspective. So it's the War of 1812. The British, they keep pushing at our strongholds, and we are at war with them. And there was a key event in this war. The British began to attack Fort McHenry in Baltimore to take over and enter our country through that port. So you might remember this as a very famous event. Francis Scott Key was on one of the British ships negotiating the freedom of a prisoner and saw the British attacking the fort. And the attack went on all night. And in the morning, what he saw there was a tattered, but an American flag hanging over the fort, seeing that they did not surrender the fort. And as you know, he was inspired to pen a poem that, surprisingly, in 1931 became our national anthem. That was a long time after this. But yes, the first verse of his poem became the words to our national anthem. So the land of the free and the home of the brave. So I was thinking, who are the free? And then the rest of us have to be brave. Yes, so I think we all need to be brave during this time. However, that's not always easy to do. So at times like this, I'm asking myself, where are we seeing the tattered flags? Who's hoisting the hope for our country? Where, I mean, it's slim sometimes, but where is it? Because we need it right now. We are at war with some sort of enemy that we don't know who, where, when. It's not clear. We're not a united country fighting some external enemy. So the enemy, I mean, it's so hard to define, but the enemy is not an entity outside of us. I'm calling on Kafka, who talked about the enemy is within us. The source of fear, the source of hatred, the source of all of this anxiety, it's actually coming within each of us. So it's not an enemy out there. The enemy that we're fighting is our own fear. Are you with me on that? It's so existential and so abstract, but I think if we can look at what's happening now and face this with some sort of courage, Kafka has been credited with this. But I believe it's older than this phrase. I think it was one of the Greek philosophers, actually, who said this. But he framed it as, from a true opponent, limitless courage flows to me. For Kafka, the enemy was within the self. It was when one allowed the self to be overrun with fear and anxiety. So as long as the opponent is not named or addressed, then this very vague, anxious fear is allowed to fester. And when we feed the fear, then the enemy takes shape outside the self. The enemy takes shape in other people fighting for what they believe is true and right. Are we truly enemies? Is the question. But when internal fears can be named and acknowledged, the enemy has no power over the transforming and integrative self. The enemy has no power that we cannot negotiate and discuss and find solutions, common solutions to our problems. In a time where it's very difficult to hold out hope, when we can know that the enemies are the only things, the barriers that keep us from connecting, the barriers that isolate us, the barriers that create this existential anxiety that can be dissipated when we reach out and connect with one another. Then the existential anxiety becomes manageable. Now, there's always other barriers that interfere with this, and certainly not every enemy can be overcome. That's not the point. The point is not to win. The point is to grapple together. The point is to connect with one another in the struggle. Once we start isolating ourselves, we've lost the battle. So where are the flags barely hanging on, but where are they giving us hope? Surely when Americans come together to stand for freedom, and we've been singing some of the songs today, when we come together, can we see the flag over the fort? We have not surrendered. We have not given up. When we take a stand, no kings. So this, the War of 1812, and even our fight for independence was a mad king with a standing army in our country. We said no to that. So when we say no to that today, we can see the flag, tattered as it might be, over the fort. We're holding the fort. When we're isolated, when we're overcome with our fears, we have no courage. But when we come together, when we can see the flags all around us, then we can have courage. We can take a stand. We can be gentle, angry people fighting for our lives. We can be gentle, loving people. We can be peace-loving people. It's so important to name our fears. It's so important to give voice to those fears because they isolate us if we don't. Have you ever had the experience of finally owning something and taking responsibility for it? And what a relief it is when I can say, yes, I did that, and I'm sorry. Then we can connect. When we can own our own flaws, our own fears, our own experiences, then we are empowered. It's our fear is the opposite. We'll lose connection, but that's just not true. So, in essence, and I was thinking about Kafka writing Metamorphosis writing a lot of different stories about his characters that are challenged and plagued with their anxieties, their fears, but they go through their process anyway. They don't always overcome their fears, but their stories are powerful explorations. So I want to say that we don't always overcome our fears, but when we tell our stories, then our stories are compelling. We have human struggles. We have human struggles in this country. We have human struggles in our families. We have human struggles everywhere, in this church, everywhere. When we come together and tell our stories, then there's hope. So the historians are trying to do this. They're trying to tell our nation's story, even in the face of big changes to our infrastructure, our economy, even in the face of these big changes, all is not over. We're a big country pushing back. We're not the little country that we were, isolated from each other. We have ways to communicate, connect. People from all walks of life are gathering together, taking stands, and that instills a kind of hope in us. There are processes in place to ensure our freedoms, yet they are being challenged. Can we come together and see those people who are fighting back, who are taking stands? And then Heather Cox Richardson started listing some of those people. And you probably have your lists too, but who are those leaders in our country today that are taking a stand and behaving like we are a democracy and we have our freedoms? Who are those people? And Heather Cox Richardson named Pritzker of Illinois, our neighbor, that he is taking a stand. He's protecting people from ICE. He's providing an image of what government can be. And so he's just one among many. We are hearing the voices, and everyone has someone that they resonate with that's speaking truth right now. So whenever we hear or see that person, we're seeing the flag over the fort. We have not surrendered. And they become beacons for us to follow. It's very difficult right now. I feel like one small voice in a sea of confusion, one small voice in people from my hometown that believe so differently than I do. But I'm very impressed that when we come together and reasonably talk, when we talk, we find common ground. We might not change each other's opinion. We don't. But we find common ground. And it's when we have this common ground that we can connect and come together and reason. People hear the truth. People see the truth. We feel that. It resonates with us. And so when we hear it and feel it, let's step toward it. There is hope, and there are reasons to hope. The decisions that have been made by this administration are unpopular. They're unpopular. And yet, Kafka reminds us that from a true opponent, boundless courage flows to me. So we are in a time where we have to be open for the courage to flow to us, to take that stand, to speak the truth that we know, and to listen to others. Can we come together? Can we reason together? Now, for Kafka, a true opponent is not necessarily the external enemy, as I was saying, but the internal conflicts, anxieties, isolation, self-doubt that plague individuals. I know I can have my fair share of that, especially when I'm trying to speak globally and it's very hard to name what is true. But self-doubt, those are all things that chip away at our ability to really connect with each other. And so that makes it the enemy to connection, the enemy to community, the enemy to building trust. Limitless courage is the immense strength and resolve that is required when we confront and begin to overcome internal obstacles. It's not a fleeting courage, but it's a deep wellspring of bravery. We've been watching the Alone shows. Have you all seen those? These are survivalists. They're experts, but they volunteer. They want to go out into the wilderness and live on their own, live on the land. They can take a few things with them, but inevitably, it's not the winters in the Arctic, or it's not the bears and the crocodiles or whatever it is that scares them and sends them home. It's fighting and coming face to face with those internal fears, struggles, the self-doubt, the longing for family, the place of belonging. I'm not able to do this alone. That's the challenge. And that's what sends many people home. And they don't consider it a loss if they don't stay out there the whole time, because they've come face to face with the enemy within them, which is that thing that's undermining who they are and how they are in the world. And so when they find that, they're done. They're ready to go home. They're ready to rejoin the world and connect with people, having a greater insight to themselves. And people in the West don't do this naturally. We don't step away from our busy distractions and truly get in touch with our internal worlds. In fact, many of us would rather not. That's just too messy, too much. So when we do, though, then it all comes up, pouring up. Reliving memories, reliving regrets, needing to forgive. And so many times, as in one participant recently said, I've forgiven everyone I need to, primarily myself, and I'm ready to go home. So the land of the free, the home of the brave, we are truly free when we can face our internal struggles, our internal enemies. Face them, feel the feelings, embrace them, let them go, forgive them. Then they can become a part of us, part of the learning, part of the journey. And isn't that what it's about, the journey? It's about learning from our experiences, the mistakes we've made, the victories, the great things that we've done. That's what it's about. A life well lived is a life that has been reflected upon, embraced, forgiven, and lessons integrated into the next part of the journey. And so, Today, I am celebrating independence. I'm celebrating that there is a path toward freedom. There is a path toward peace. And like the song says, it begins with me. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me. Amen.
Does anyone want to start our after sermon discussion? Thank you, Joel.
So, as I have mentioned, honestly, probably at least once every time I've been here, I was raised very, like, fundamentalist, evangelical, Southern Baptist. One thing that we talked about a lot, like it was ingrained into me, was spiritual warfare. And in a very literal sense, in that there are demons and angels everywhere that we cannot see that are, I have OCD and I have intrusive thoughts, and I didn't have language for that growing up, and my parents always told me that it was fires from the arrows, fiery arrows from the devil, I had to talk to my parents about that once I got diagnosed with OCD and say, hey, this really messed me up to think that. I digress. I bring that up to say, I do think that there is a spiritual aspect to our reality, and that there are things going on beyond our physical perception. But I also think in a much more non-literal sense, there is this spiritual warfare going on. And it kind of always has been, but it is particularly happening right now in our country, in that there is a battle for the soul of our country. Again, as I am wont to do, I will draw a parallel with a movie that I'm actually not crazy about this movie, but I think it has a good allegory. The Batman movie, The Dark Knight, the one with the best Joker performance, not crazy about it because it positions Batman as like a fascist super cop, but... there is this idea, and towards the end of the movie, the climax, and spoilers for a 20-year-old massively popular superhero movie, like I'm not too worried about spoiling this, but basically it comes down to who is right about the actual character of the citizens of Gotham. Batman, who believes that people are good, or Joker, who believes that people are chaotic and evil. And it turns out that people are good, and people will not blow up another group of people just to save themselves. I think that is a really encouraging thing to see in our reality, in that we have seen a large turnout across the country at the No Kings protests. We have seen people resisting ICE and protecting their neighbors, and there are a lot of people who are still very hateful and very cruel, but I think that is a very outspoken minority, because I work in construction, and I work with conservative people, and I talk to them, and they are generally reasonable and caring people who have kind of fallen for a certain kind of propaganda. But I think if we talk to these people and allow them into our circles and our environment and our influence, then we can... Again, start that peace with ourselves and expand it to our immediate outside world.
Yeah, I agree. It's good you're having those conversations, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think another evidence for that is there's a lot of small communities where ICE is coming in and taking away Hispanic people who the community respects and really cares about, and the whole community is getting into an uproar.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's supposed to be taking the criminals, not the good people. And, you know, my experience, though fairly limited, is people who support the MAGA ideas, if they just happen to meet someone who's interracial or Hispanic or something, they're fine with them. What they're afraid of is the group. Oh, all these terrible, awful Hispanics who are out there doing all kinds of crimes. Well, we know they're not there, but they don't. And so yeah, I think it is possible to have a reasonable conversation with a lot of them. And it also, from what I've read and from what little experience I have with it, it starts with talking about what were the important events in your life that made you believe what you believe? Because it's hard to argue with somebody's experience and invite them to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Comments? No more comments?
So one thing that you just briefly mentioned was just like this phrase, one small voice. And my five-year-old, he came home, this was a couple months ago, and started singing this song that was, it's called One Small Voice, and it's like, it's a sign language song. And, well, there's sign language to it, I guess. And it goes along with the song that we just sang. But it goes, with one small voice, singing out a song, with one small voice, singing sweet and strong, one by one they'll grow, and together sing along, and then soon all the world will be singing. And so it just kind of went along with everything that you were saying.
Yes.
And everything that in the song, and it just kind of like came to mind, and I was just like, oh, that's like beautiful.
So, it is.
And it was like my five-year-old was singing that to me.
Children so, teach us so much, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. So I just
that's great.
Had to share that.
And I think, we've sung some of the songs, but I know I am very inspired by music, and when music comes out of these movements, it rallies people together, and it touches our hearts and souls so differently than just screaming and yelling. But when we're singing together, we're breathing together. When we breathe together, we really do come together. And there is a spiritual connection among us. So one small voice. I love that.
Anybody else? I did rewatch. Oh, there we go. I'll be quiet for a minute. Let Sue speak.
You were talking about courage versus fear.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of us in here are liberal, Democrat. I don't want to speak for everybody, but a lot of people that are liberal or Democrat have been saying, who's our leader? Who's going to lead us through this? And it's basically, we are, right? I mean, there's lots of people that have spoken up and have had leadership roles, AOC, Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker, on and on and on. And, you know, we're all together, whether you have a political position or public office or just us regular folks. I forgot what I was going to say. But basically, it's this idea that, you know, we have a small voice. We get all those voices together, and we can have power and courage.
When you said that, we're all in this together, kind of thought, When we divide ourselves into groups like liberal, Democrats, conservative, Republicans, or whatever, it's hard to engage because it's an us against them feeling. I know that's not what you were saying, but this is what came to my mind. But when we pull apart the issues, that's when we're not identified with a big group. We're really talking through issues and connecting and making our relationships the centerpiece of it. And when we do that, we're much more likely to come together somehow and join in. Like, I didn't like the way he made fun of disabled people. Well, many people didn't like that. Not just us or them. We did not like that. Some people it didn't bother, but many people were bothered by that. So there are some guardrails that we can put on behavior without judging based on identity.
There's lots of common ground.
Lots of common ground. I am finding that.
So my struggle has to do with the fear and anxiety that I'm feeling in that the face of this administration has taken what used to be his projection on others, the way he felt, and now is not only projecting that onto the libtards and the Democrats and, you know, us, but is now also expressing that as his own feelings. And this is someone who has people who support him who are very willing to take that from an emotional, verbal attack to a physical attack. People who now, as is being said, are being hired for ICE in positions of authority. And as a lesbian and someone whose rights are being projected to be removed and destroyed, and I feel a lot of fear and anxiety that this type of discourse is going to affect me personally. I'm already scared to death because my children are half Mexican and look Mexican, don't necessarily look white. And so fear for their safety. So I haven't felt that as strongly as I have this week. I don't know that talking's gonna make a difference. And I don't know how to feel safe again. So I don't know, there aren't any answers, but it's...
Well, I see a lot of nods around the room, and you're not alone in that fear, and of course I'm with you in that too. So for me, and maybe for many people, when we talk about it, then we find these like-minded people who can stand with us. And I don't know what all that would look like, but I think there's some hope there that we're not alone in it.
As I'm walking over here, I might mention that I, to some extent, understand. It's not quite as close for me as you, but my daughter's boyfriend, they're very attached to each other, is Hispanic. and I worry about him, and I've tried to get them to get birth certificates to carry with them, but they haven't done it yet, as far as I know.
We're kind of talking about whether or not we individually see the results of what we're doing and how it's hard to continue to stand up. And that makes me think of the many situations where the people doing the standing up didn't see the good results. In very big, important things like the women who wanted to vote and were imprisoned and were beaten and were force-fed, they didn't necessarily get to vote. But my mom did, and I get to vote. So we might not get to see the fruits of our labor. That might not make it, I guess, easier, but I think it does mean that sometimes the victory is there, we just might not see it. But our nieces will, our daughters will, our sons will.
And I think, too, taking that stand is worth celebrating. Whether we see the fruits of it or not, I know I like myself when I took the stand that I felt was right. If I didn't do anything, then that's when I start negative self-talk. So I don't know how comforting that would be if I were being tortured. But knowing that I took a stand and did the right thing that I understood was right would be some reward.
So I have conflicting feelings. So I would love to go to like protests and just like, I would just love to go there, yeah. But I'm a nurse, and if I were to get in trouble or by the law or anything like that, my license would immediately be revoked. And I would have to go to in front of the nursing board and everything, and it would break something in me to not be able to help people. Because I work at Eskenazi, and so I work at the county hospital, and so I see a lot of like poverty and like patients and everything like that. So I always tell Tyler, my husband, I would love to go and do all of that, but it's like I feel like I am like being like pulled into another direction, because it's like I'm helping people over here, but I also want to like use my voice over here. So it's kind of, I don't really know what to do.
Yes, and I think too, working at Eskenazi, you are caring for the poor and the sick, and you are doing something very meaningful, and I think those of us who can't go to a protest, what can we do? And it might not help if you want to go to a protest and you can't, but I'm glad you're making a decision to continue to help the poor and those who are sick, who can't afford other care, because you're giving them excellent care. And that is its own protest. You know, to live life well is revenge. It is, it's the best way to respond to this.
Anybody else?
I know I spoke for a few minutes before, but I'll be quick. I just wanted to add something that's kind of addressing the three of you, but mostly building on what Sue was saying, first off, I sympathize with your concern about being a nurse and getting in trouble or getting injured and not being able to help people, because Indy, my wife, they feel the exact same way because they work as a birth worker, particularly with poor and black and brown women, which we in Indiana have one of the highest maternal and infant mortality rates for black and brown women. And so they are very passionate about that and very concerned about either of us going out because I'm their primary support. So, but then I think as far as like actually trying to help and trying to do things and trying to enact change and potentially not seeing that change, I mean, I went to my first Pride event last week, and I learned that day at the Sunday message that this church is kind of the grandfather, grandmother of that event. And so, in a way, and I know a few of you have been here since the 90s when this church was started and, like, took part in making that happen. And so, in a way, you all have already seen some of the change that you've made in the world. And we just saw it last week, and it was a wonderful and beautiful thing. And I think we, as a collective, and especially those of us, or those of you, I'm fairly new, but those of you who have been here for a while, our community elders, and we are, as a collective, a community leader. We can be, at least, and we can organize and work and join with other communities. I'm in a union, and there's all kinds of other unions around here. There's other churches, the Methodists, the United Methodists specifically, and other groups that we can work with to try to work on our own community, because we can't individually change the world or even our country or even our state, but we can change the world of a few people around us. And if we can spread out and help people in that way and influence people in that way, then that if enough people are doing that all around, then that will eventually balloon into a much larger thing. The American Revolution wasn't a huge united army, it was a bunch of militias.
Thank you, Joel. I wanted to throw out one thought, and I think we need to stop. Actually, it's a different perspective, maybe, or a larger perspective. As an example, and there are others, patriarchy essentially puts men in a box and puts women in a box. Racism puts black people in one box and white people and Hispanic in different boxes. And what that does, it takes away your ability to be an authentic person. To be who you think you want to be, you have to be who that role says you are. If you're a man, you have to not have anything to do with the feminine. You have to have power and control, and you can't be too sensitive. And vice versa, women can be all those things, but they can't take force and ideas. And fortunately, the women are growing out of that. But at any rate, the point is, the patriarchy or the oligarchs or whoever it is who's trying to keep things under control, their control, they're trying to put us all in boxes. And that's the whole point of the 2025 plan. It's to put us all back in our boxes. They want LGBT people back in the closet. So one of the things, just the fact of remaining your authentic self in every possible situation is working against what they're trying to do.
Of course, yes.
So try to always be authentically who you are.
That's the summary of what I was trying to say. Thank you.